night before the hunt are hurrying around trying to check all our cameras to see what's fresh at the water. And bulls hadn't hit that water, any of the waters, in 5 or 6 days. It looked, just from the trail camera pictures, that it looked like the rut had really kind of winded down. You know, our worst fear, the bulls had pushed out. We were just seeing spikes and small raghorn bulls. Just not what we wanted to see. So we get over on the ridge and I let out a location bugle and immediately get an answer back from a bull down in the bottom of this canyon that we're up above.
Nice.
And just from the, sound of his bugle, he sounds like a very mature bull. So I scream at him again and he screams at me again and we almost get in this full-on screaming match to see who sounds louder. Well, we're moving really slow through these trees. And again, there was some cattle off to our right. And again, they just busted out and I didn't think anything of it. But all of a sudden, 5 or 6 cow elk stood up right in front of us, like 60 yards, and start looking around trying to figure out what's going on. And then we hear the bull bugle and start trying to round up his cows. We were in there plenty early and our plan was to listen mostly and see if there was anything bugling and anything talking in there. And the whole time we were sitting there, it was just dead silent. Nothing, not even a bird or anything making a peep. And we're getting a little discouraged. And right as it started getting gray light and closer to shooting hours, we heard this one bugle down in the bottom of the canyon.
Welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Couple things before we jump to this episode. Please, you heard me say a million times, go give us a review on iTunes. Helps me keep this podcast free and helps with the ratings. Also, go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. If you use our promo code John Stallone, all one word, you save 20% off on anything. And it's not just shooting bags. They do glassing pads. They're working on some other really cool stuff coming up here for the hunter, bow hunters also. So go check them out, phoenixshootingbags.com. And if you're looking for a really good hunt, I have some really good opportunities for you. Hit us up on daysinthewild.com or check out my blog, johnstallone.me, and send us an email. If you're looking to do a coos deer hunt, javelina, mule deer in South Dakota, we got some opportunities in California as well. So give me a call if you're looking to do something different this year and like to get on a special hunt. Days in the Wild Outfitters, and we'll take care of you. Without further ado, let's jump into this episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today, we're talking to listeners of the show, kind of opened it up to guys who would listen to the show and had some cool hunting stories to share with us. And today we got Morgan Abbott on with us, and Morgan's going to share one of his hunting stories. I guess it's from this past season, actually. So without further ado, what's going on, man? How are you?
Oh, not much. Just out here doing some scouting for the next hunt, getting ready for it. But
nice.
Like you said, I'm Morgan Abbott. I grew up in Delta, Utah, kind of a central town, small rural community. Grew up hunting. My dad got me into it like at a really young age. Never had a babysitter, so I was tagging along from almost, 9 months, 10 months old.
Oh, geez. Okay. Nice.
Shot my first deer actually when I was 4 years old.
Yeah. Nice. So very similar to my experience. I was 5, but go ahead.
Yep. And so I've been pretty much in the whole hunting world my whole life. And I'm 23 now, but just starting to be able to take off more time from work and go more often and be out there as much as possible.
Awesome. So Delta, Utah. Where's Delta, Utah?
Probably about 30 minutes off of I-15, about northwest of Fillmore, Utah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I know where that is. Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. Good deal. I hunt Utah quite a bit. For a while, I was coming almost every year for deer. And I actually have a tag this year. I got a Books Close South tag. So I will be there in a couple of weeks. Yeah. Here, you're not, Delta's not terribly far from where I hunt. I've hunted, well, yeah, I'll leave it at that. You're not terribly far.
I hear you there. Yeah.
I just adapted a new policy in the last few 2 years here that I'm just don't even tell people where I am anymore, because
yeah,
it never works out into my favor anymore. So, but anyway, yeah. So I'll be up there in a couple weeks. I'm excited.
Awesome.
All right, man. Well, so let's hear it. Let's hear the story. This is from this season, correct?
Yep, this season. The limited entry muzzleloader elk on the Wasatch. I guess I can say that. It's not too big of a deal. But, yeah, earlier this year, good friend of mine, I actually work with him. He's my foreman. And he drew the tag. He had 10 points, pretty much max points, drew the tag. And, I mean, we started talking and putting plans together and kind of getting ready for the season. I told him about this one area that some other friends of mine I had talked to said, you know, the bulls tend to rut pretty good in here, especially during the muzzleloader. Not a ton of people because it's not as accessible. And it just kind of started from there. Mm-hmm. Started just kind of basic scouting, trying to locate cows in July. Running, you know, 4 or 5 trail cameras just over water, and saw a few good bulls early summer, but you know, as it is, the rut, you know, pushes in and the bulls, they completely move from where you found them. But luckily the groups of cows that we had located started pulling in bulls. The bull we ended up killing, we got on trail camera the 30th of August, and he hung around in the area clear up, this first week of October, that right when we killed him. Mm-hmm. And
real quick before you get into the rest of it, so this tag, limited entry muzzleloader, it opens in August and goes all the way
it opens September 27th.
Okay.
We were trying to get a handle on where the bulls are. We showed up the night before the hunt, and I guess periodically, I mean, once a week, I'd run up there and check the cameras just to see, you know, what bulls are pulling in. And there was a few other bulls in the area ranging from 300 to 350. And my friend, he just wanted to kill a respectable bull for the Wasatch. And I says, you know, 330, that's a pretty good bull as far as the Wasatch goes. You know, it's pretty respectable. And right. So night before the hunt, we are hurrying around trying to check all our cameras to see what's fresh at the water. And bulls hadn't hit that water, any of the waters, in 5 or 6 days. It looked, just from the trail camera pictures, that it looked like the rut had really kind of winded down. You know, our worst fear, the bulls had pushed out. We were just seeing spikes and small raghorn bulls, just not what we wanted to see.
Right.
So a little bit discouraging, but nonetheless, we woke up opening morning and just started, you know, from square one, trying to locate bulls. We hiked in a canyon, about a mile and a half up the canyon, just trying to locate bugle, and nothing was responding. So we hiked back out and hurry and moved over to another area before it got too late in the morning, and glassed up a 300 to 310 type bull, straight 6 point, but he's just a little short on every tine. And my buddy Gary, he wanted to shoot this bull, and I says, you know, I think we could do better, and it's opening morning, you know, let's like have some fun with this. I think the bulls will start talking a little more. We can maybe pull something a little better than just him together, you know. So he agreed, and another friend of his had just showed up to help glass, and glass a pretty good bull in this other area. So we went to check it out that night, and we ended up getting him on the bull. I started bugling, and the bull just kept bugling with me. And I just kept him talking while Gary moved in mm-hmm. and got in closer. But where we're hunting, it's just so thick. A lot of maple and oak in this particular one spot. And at one time, he said the bull sounded like he was, you know, 20 yards away, but he just could not see through the trees enough to pick out any antler or body or anything. He was seeing fresh tracks, you know, the whole way. And it was, I mean, it got too dark for us to shoot, and we ended up not closing the deal on this bull. Mm-hmm. Second morning comes in, we go into another area trying to just, you know, find as much elk as possible. Well, let me back up a little. My buddy who was in there that night had spotted two other 6 points in this other area, and that's why we're going there. And I told him, just, you know, stick with them till dark, and then we'll try and get in there in the morning. So anyways, next morning, we get in there, and we hike in, and we're almost to them. My buddy's on the radio, you know, okay, you know, come down the ridge. You're about 300 yards above them. And, I mean, we're moving pretty slow through the Quakies. I mean, it's pretty high Quakies. And thick timber, dark pine, and we're pushing down this ridge, and all of a sudden he comes over the radio. He says, they're running back to the south. I don't think you spooked them, but they're pushing out. And so we started moving back around and backtracking, trying to cut them off, and we heard one lone bugle, and that was it for that morning as far as, you know, that group of elk. Well, we're still trying to catch up to them, and we come down one ridge, and I pull up my glasses, and I mean, I immediately see an elk on this ridge just barely pop over into a canyon. So we decide, well, let's go see, you know, what's going on over there, if there's a lot of elk, or, I guess. So we get over on the ridge, and I let out a location bugle, and immediately get an answer back from a bull down in the bottom of this canyon that we're up above.
Nice.
And just from the, I mean, sound of his bugle, he sounds like a very mature bull. And so I scream at him again, and he screams at me again, and we almost get in this full-on screaming match to see who sounds louder. And I told Gary, get in there, the same situation. Get in there. I'll keep him talking. You just try and get in close and kill him. So I stay up on the ridge while Gary slips in, and about a half hour of me just screaming at this bull, and it was constant. I mean, I'd scream at him, he'd scream back at me. And just about a half hour after that, I hear his bugle about 100 yards further than the last time I had heard it. And so I start cow calling a few times and calling at him a few more times with the bugle. And then he sounds like he's over in the next canyon. Well, right after that, Gary calls me and he says, oh, I had him at like 30 yards. He had big fronts. He just, all I could see was his fronts and his head. And he was moving through the pines so quick. And that's all he could ever see. And I said, well, we'll come back and try and get on this bull again tonight. Let's get out of here and go get breakfast for now, because we kind of went into that one without too much on the provisions. So we backed out, and on our way down, I checked the camera on the wallow, and there was a bull that had hit the wallow that morning that we were for sure we wanted to kill. It was a big 5x6, and an older mature bull, and I told Gary, is like, maybe it wouldn't hurt to sit the water, and if you hear him bugle, he's probably pretty close, you might hear him bugle, and I'll go see if I can glass up this bull that we were talking to this morning. And so we agreed on that. He sat the water that night, And I pretty much spent the whole night jumping around, glassing different areas, located a few other bulls for the next morning. And his buddy and my buddy never saw anything. And they ended up having to go home that night also. So another cool day of rut activity, but nothing successful yet. Mm-hmm. Third morning, this is Wednesday morning, we decide to do this big hike back into the canyon where we had seen, or where we'd gotten the screaming match with the bull, and spend all day in there chasing just him. And we got in there, I mean, lots of younger bulls, it stormed, and there was a lot of dew and rain still on the leaves and stuff, so it made moving through real quiet. Perfect conditions, everything was getting going and fired up. Saw, like I said, a few young bulls, a few cows, and eventually about 8:30 in the morning, we hear the bugle, that the familiar bugle of that bull. Mm-hmm. And we just start taking off towards him, trying to catch up and get close enough to maybe challenge him or do anything to get him to come in. So we get in, we cross this canyon, we drop down, and on our way back up, it just sounds like he's getting further. So we slow the pace a little, hopefully he'll bed down, you know, and we get over in this big hillside that has all these thick quakies. I mean, you see 40 yards and that's about it. Try bugling, and by now the wind has picked up so much in that afternoon that we can't hardly hear anything. And we try bugling, can't hear anything, bugle some more, I mean, just nothing's responding. Thanks. So we try picking up tracks, of course, you know, no luck. We're trying to find any sign of which way he went. And we ended up going to the top of the ridge just to get out of the canyon so we wouldn't bump him or anything, and just spending the whole day on the top of the ridge until it got a little later. And by the time it got later, I mean, off and on the whole day, we would hear bugles and we'd try and find the bull. But most of the time when we did find the bull, it was just a younger bull, you know, 4 or 5 point, nothing that we wanted to go chase. Hmm. By that evening, again, it was just nothing happening. It kind of died down. Nothing was bugling. Nothing was talking at all. And so we pulled out a little early in order to just get out of the canyon to get back to the weeder before it got too dark. We were in there a couple miles. So the next morning, by this time, we're having fun with the whole rut, but we want to kill some. And so by this time, Gary's like, I want to go shoot that bull that we saw opening morning. Let's go see if we can find him tomorrow morning.
I know what that's like.
Yeah.
The fear of missing out starts coming in.
Yep, it does. And, you know, they say, you know, don't shoot on the...
Yeah.
Or, yeah, you know, shoot don't on shoot the f- what... on last day what you wouldn't shoot on the first, or
yeah, it's the other way around basically, but yeah, shoot on the last basically is what it is. Yeah,
exactly. Yep. Yeah, so yeah. Anyways, so we go up to go try and find this bull and kill him, and we get to the trailhead and somebody was already there that morning. They just flat out beat us. And so instead of, you know, going in ruining their hunt or just trying to compete with somebody, mm-hmm. we decided, well, let's just go try this completely other area we've never even been to and just see what's in there. So we actually drive about, I guess it was an hour, over to this other spot to just see what had happened. And it kind of took a little bit of our morning. It only ran about a half hour into light. But when we got there, we stepped out of the side-by-side, and I ripped a bugle, and immediately I had four bulls fire off. Nice. and answer me. And I was like, we picked a good spot.
Yeah.
And we just picked up everything and took off. And we just chased bugles all morning. It was pretty great. We saw a few raghorn bulls, and then had a really close encounter with a bull we probably would have killed had we been able to see him better. He sounded like a more mature bull. It's hard to tell, you know, but most of the time, like, you can tell a 3 or 4 year old bull from a 5 or 6 year old bull, you know. Mm-hmm. But anyways, this bull, we got, you know, 50, 60 yards from, and some cattle actually saw us moving in and just completely busted through the trees and took the elk with them. And so ruined that stock, and we tracked them for a little while trying to catch up, but elk run real fast. So
yeah.
So that was our morning there. We come back to camp and, you know, get our morning breakfast and whatever, take a nap. And that evening, Gary's like, that was fun this morning. I want to go back in there again. Let's go see what we can turn up. And I was like, heck yeah, let's do it. So we go back in there for the evening hunt, and it was almost the same story, like just good action, lots of bugles, got in there on what we thought was that same bull from the morning hunt, and got in close. And when we showed up, I told him, like, let's just be quiet tonight. Let's not try and bugle and get him talking or anything. Let's do our own thing and just kind of still hunt through these trees and see how close we can get, and then maybe we'll kick something up. Well, we're moving really slow through these trees, and again, there was some cattle off to our right, and again, they just busted out, and I didn't think anything of it. But all of a sudden, 5 or 6 cow elk stood up right in front of us, like 60 yards, and start looking around trying to figure out what's going on. And then we hear the bull bugle and start trying to round up his cows. And there's one point we could see just there was it come down and it was a bench, but then it just dropped right off. Mm-hmm. Right where those cows were bedded, and he was just below the bench, and we could just barely see the top end of his back tines, and he moved down below them, and then they moved off. And when we tried to get closer and trying to get a shot or whatever, there was actually another hunter down below them about another 100 yards. Mm. And he was actually hunting deer, though, for the general muzzleloader deer hunt.
Got it.
And we hurry and went and talked to him because we wanted to see if he had seen the bull and seen how big he was. And I asked him, like, what is he, you know? And he says, oh, he's just a 5 point, you know? And I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe we won't chase him tonight. Maybe we'll see if there's anything else in here, you know, that we can turn up. So we kind of let him go, and we wandered around there for a little while, you know, chasing some more bugles. And really, after that encounter, it wasn't too action-packed. It was kind of a dull night after that. So we get back to camp that night, and he says, you know what, let's wake up really early tomorrow and beat those other guys in there, make sure we're the first ones into that canyon, and let's go try and find that bull that we passed on the first morning again. So next morning, this is Friday morning, October 2nd, I believe, and we get in there. We woke up at 4 a.m. to get in there. Mm-hmm. And we get to our glassing knob probably an hour 15, hour and 20 minutes before it even got shooting light. And so we were in there planning early, and our plan was to listen mostly and see if there was anything bugling and anything talking in there. And the whole time we were sitting there, it was just dead silent, nothing, not even a bird or anything making a peep. And we're getting a little discouraged. And right as it started getting gray light and closer to shooting hours, we heard this one bugle down in the bottom of the canyon. And I had my tripod set up with my binoculars on them and just kind of glassing for this bull that's bugling. And about 10 minutes after shooting light, I see two cows moving through this real small opening about 100 yards long by 100 yards wide, mm-hmm. sagebrush, and they're moving into these quakies. I see these two cows, and right behind them, I see antlers just emerge from the maples, you know, and they come out, and then I see the whole body of the bull, and I'm thinking, okay, it looks like a good bull, and he kind of turns his head, and I'm like, okay, he's a 6-point. All right, he looks like the bull that we passed up opening morning. Let's go see if we can get on him. Mm-hmm. So we start our hook around to get in. It's one big long canyon. We're at the head of the canyon, and we're trying to get on the one side and side hill in above the bull and then drop in. And so we get over on the hillside, and we start side hilling straight. So we're right above the bull, and there's like three little fingers, well, big fingers that cut dropping off of this side hill. And we were coming down each one trying to see the bull. Well, the first one we get to, we drop down to the end of it, and we just sit down, and we're about 700 yards from the clearing where he'd seen the bull. And I start glassing the bottom, and there's a creek in the bottom, just a slight stream, not anything too serious, but
okay.
You can kind of hear the stream. And all of a sudden I hear this bugle just clear as day, sound like he's super close. And I turn, and on the adjacent finger to us, just across the canyon, about 600 yards, 500 or 600 yards, there's that. I see a cow and the bull following her, just hightailing it as hard as they can go around that corner. And when I got a look at this bull, I recognized him from one of the bulls that was on trail camera that we had, and I told Gary, and we called him the Kirby Thirds Bull. I told Gary, that's the Kirby Thirds Bull. We got to freaking go now. We got to haul ass and get around this bend and keep following him. So we pick up everything, and we literally run as hard as we can go. I am jogging across the ridge trying to get through all this scrub oak. And the scrub oak is so thick on this hillside, it is tearing us apart. I mean, I got a big hole in my shirt, and I'm just trying to drag myself through it. He's trying to stay behind me. At one point, I says, is there anything I can do to help you go faster? He says, can you carry the gun? And I grab the gun from him, and I'm just hauling butt through this scrub oak. We're trying to get over to the next ridge. And we finally get over to the top of the next ridge, and I sit down, I start glassing again. And sure enough, I see two cows and the bull just topping the next ridge, further away from us. So I was like, shit, I got to keep going. So I told Gary, I says, get your crap again, let's go. So we pick everything up, and we're right back at it, you know, running as hard as we can go across this scrub oak hillside. And we get over to the next ridge above where I'd seen the bull kind of drop in. And I started to slow down just to be a little more quiet, and kind of moving slow through the oak. And I hear a bugle over in this little draw that they dropped into. It wasn't much of a draw, but it was good enough that they could have bedded in there. And I think that's where they were headed to, you know, go do their afternoon ritual or whatever. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of pushing through this scrub oak, and it starts to thin out. It's not so much the canopy scrub oak. It's more like just, you know, smaller bushes, and it's turning into this sagebrush hillside that we're on. And we kind of round the ridge line, and I look down below us, and I see this cow, and she's in this pretty big meadow. It's probably 200 yards long and about 100 yards wide in this, you know, draw that they had dropped into in this big kind of rock chute right below us. And I mean, they've got scrub oak all around them, but just this one area, it's grassy and some sagebrush. And I get my tripod set up and a shooting saddle. I have a triclops and got that set up on the tripod set up, got Gary on the gun and ready to go. I start ranging the cow and she's 212 yards and she kind of moves out and then I see the bull come out of the maples again, out of the oak. And he's just feeding right along the same trail that she took. They have no idea we're there.
Nice.
And he's all set and ready on the gun. And I'm talking to him, you know, okay, just hold dead on him. You know, the gun's zeroed for 200 yards. Just hold right where you want to hit. You should be perfect. And the bull starts feeding. And he's kind of coming up to us. He's quartering really hard towards us. And as he starts to turn, he turns back towards his right. So he's turning and showing the bull's left side to us.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of feeding. And he turned his neck to where you could see the shoulder really good, but he's still quartering real hard. And I told Gary, I says, if you feel comfortable with that shot, go ahead and take it. I'm on him. I got him in my binoculars. Just squeeze the trigger, you know, take your time, trying to walk him through it, you know. And he's like, okay, so I'm watching, and all of a sudden, kaboom! And, of course, smoke of the muzzleloader comes out. You lose sight of the bull for just a second. And when it clears up, I see the bull, and he's just locked, you know, up, and he's just standing right there in the same position we shot at him in. And I told Gary, reload, reload! Hurry, get another one. And the bull is just sitting there and Gary starts to reload and I'm holding on him with my binoculars and I look right behind his shoulder. Mm-hmm. I see blood just pouring out behind his shoulder. Pink foam, you know, perfect lung shot. And I look on the ground and I could see this huge pool of blood forming. And I said, you hit him. He's not going anywhere. Just take your time. He gets another round in, and the bull starts to turn back to his left and showing his whole right side. The bull turns perfectly broadside and stops right as Gary gets all the way reloaded, gets back on the tripod, and I told him, shoot him again. And he shoots, and then this time the bull stumbles, and I told Gary, reload again, because you never know, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And bull kind of stumbles and takes a few big steps down the hill and then does the whole death wobble and then turns over and falls down. And just then Gary says, he's down. And I says, yeah, he's down. Keep reloading. And Gary's, I don't need to. And I'm like, just reload, okay? Because I don't know. He could get back up. And I'm watching him with my binoculars and I could still see the air bubbles on it behind his shoulder, still, you know, he's still pushing air through his lungs. I can see air bubbles.
Right.
And I says, he's still breathing. You got to get another round ready just in case. And I just watched him for the longest time, it felt like. And finally, the bubble stopped. He never moved again. And that's when it just hit us. It all came rushing in, like all the stress of, oh, shoot, we passed that bull. And maybe we won't kill one now or whatever. All that just completely left us, and the excitement and the emotional part of it just hit us all at once of holy cow. We just did this. I mean, we probably hiked close to 50 miles in those 5 days hunting these elk.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know for sure. I didn't track it or anything, but I mean,
oh, I believe it.
Oh, we worked our butts off. We were trying to do, you know, 5 to 10 miles a day just chasing elk. And you know how it is. When they're bugling, you don't even think about how tired your legs are or how bad your feet hurt. You just keep going. And it just drives you. And when it all settled in, like we were just so humbled from what had just happened and it just hit us. I mean, we both broke down right there. It was like, holy cow, I can't believe it just came together on a freaking giant bull for the Wasatch too. And
well, sorry, what did this one end up scoring?
He scored right at 330.
Nice. Oh yeah.
So we were completely ecstatic as far as, you know, how big the bull was, how far or how hard we had worked, and then it all came together like that. And
those are the best
ones. So we pick up Yeah. So we picked up our packs and our guns and all that. So start walking down to the bull, and I mean, he just kept getting bigger. I mean, way bigger than what we thought. When I'd seen this bull on trail camera, I thought 310 to 315. Not a huge bull, but not a small bull. We'd definitely shoot him if we saw him. And everything just got a little bit bigger as we got on him. And I know, you know, he's a 330 bull, right? You can't say that too much because, I mean, there's a lot more bigger bulls hitting the dirt out there. That, yeah. But on the Wasatch, like, I mean, I would say the Wasatch isn't as good as the Manti, or because I know you've hunted the Manti, but,
yep.
You know, I would relate it to the Manti as far as, you know, there's a good population of elk, but not the age class that you would like to see.
Right.
But get our hands on him, and I mean, Gary just completely lost it. It was great to see him humbled by it, but also so happy to have his bull. And of course, I mean, we got our pictures. We had to call a few guys because by the time it was all said and done and we chased this bull down, we were about 2.5 to 2.7 miles as a bird flies from where the four-wheeler was. And we actually spent the rest of the day, just me and Gary, shuttling meat closer. So when we got guys to come in and help us, we were only, you know, about a mile and a half from the road. And we nice. Could actually...
That's awesome.
We could actually make it easier. So...
Yeah, I have been, knock on wood, very lucky over the years with elk packouts. Most of, even with clients, I've had one or two that were shitty, like really yeah. shitty. But for the most part, I don't know what it is, but I just get, and I hope it continues to do that because I'm getting older. It's getting harder to do.
yeah,
like even this last bull here in Idaho, I think we were like 2.5 miles away, which wasn't, it could have been a lot worse. I mean, there was a couple of days we put 14 miles
yep.
and 4,000 feet of elevation. It was nuts. We were trying to get a bull from my buddy Charles, and we were way the freak yep. back there. And literally at the very top of the mountain range, just above tree line and everything. And I'm like, I mean, I wasn't praying that he didn't kill it, but I was like, when it fell apart on us, I was only upset for a little bit. Because then I realized, yep. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I don't have an 8 mile pack out right now. Like,
exactly.
I mean, oh my goodness, man.
And I don't think people actually realize how big elk really are, especially a mature bull, and how hard it really is to put one on your back and hike that far in steep, thick country.
Yeah.
And even across flat ground, I mean, it's still very difficult. And
oh, yeah. Yeah. Like here in Arizona, there's roads everywhere. And unless you shoot them down in some crazy canyon or something like that, for the most part, your packouts are pretty mild in comparison to some of the other states that I've hunted.
Yeah.
But that still, it takes a freaking toll on you, man. Like, so yeah. my packout was all downhill. I did not have to climb up anything. It was literally downhill the whole way, and I was freaking trashed. I was absolutely trashed after that. But yeah, no, man, that's awesome. That's an awesome story. I'm glad he got it done, and you guys were able to wrap tag around a nice one. And so now, as an in-state guy, how long does he have to wait before he can put it in there again?
He has a waiting period of 5 years before he can apply for elk again.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But as a resident, you know, you can only apply for, you have to choose between antelope, mule deer, and elk. And so he'll probably just start applying for mule deer now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's nuts. I mean, it's cool in a way because it kind of keeps point creep down, but
yeah.
Jeez, man. That's, I know, when I found out I had I thought it was like a 2 year waiting period, but I was like, really? I got to wait that long before I can start applying again? It's basically a once in a lifetime tag then. It's because, like.
Yeah, it is. Well, and that's the way he kind of looked at it is, you know, he's kind of older. He's, I guess, not older, but he's 45.
Oh, yeah. He's old as dirt.
And, you know, to me,
we're not friends no more. We're not friends no more, man.
So, anyways, he looked at it like, well, shoot, by the time he waits another 5 years,
it's rough.
He applies for probably by the time if he drew the tag again, if he didn't get lucky and draw a random tag, he would wait 15 years after point creep. So he's 20 years out from drawing another elk tag. That puts him at 65, 70 to 70 years old. And by then, how good is your health? You know, I mean, I know some older gentlemen, you know, in that age category that still get around really well, but they ain't no spring chicken either.
No, it's tough. It definitely gets harder and harder every year, man. That's without a doubt. And I'm pretty good about keeping myself in shape, but
yeah.
Well, awesome, man. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing the story with us and participating in our listener appreciation, I guess. And keep in touch. I'd like to hear what the rest of how your season unfolds. And
we'll do.
Maybe we'll get you on another time one of these days.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on. Thanks for listening to me.
Absolutely. All right. Have a good one.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to check out daysinthewild.com and be sure to give us a review on iTunes. Thank you, and we'll check you out on the next episode.